Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
And here we go with another edition of Jaguars This Week. First Wednesday of June, first day of June. Welcome to darn near summer, folks. Well, Brian Sexton, along with Jeff Loggeman and Joe Fortunato.
And this is the week, right? I mean, you know, you got the big hearing coming up on June 3rd, Friday. And I guess that we're going to have, what, 2-3 weeks, you know, for
it's
them?
It's anybody's guess. There are people who speculate it could come within a week, but most people think it could come as late as the week after the 4th of July.
Well, I would hope that, you know, that the judges that are going to be looking at this case have done a lot of advance work and looking at the previous court's decision, and so that they can move fairly quickly, because the timeline, as we talked about, we're now, what, under 100 days prior to the expected, what, date for the Hall of Fame game.
Right.
What are we, in the 90s? What was the date of the Hall of Fame game?
The Hall of Fame game is August 7th, so we're under 3 months there.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as the regular season date, I meant.
The regular season's August 11th. I'm sorry, September 11th.
September 11th, so we're talking July, August. 90-something days away.
Days, yeah.
You know, we're
just to lay out the
right
timeline
there
again. What we talked about last week was a three-week warm-up to the season, meaning free agency period, get your rookie class signed. That is, in all likelihood, a done deal. I mean, the union's going to demand that.
Well, you got to have it.
And the teams need that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, once you get into free agency, a player who is a free agent has to be able to do the tour. In other words, he's got to go to teams that are interested in him, take a physical, maybe have a workout. If that's necessary, then after that, then you've got to have time to negotiate. So, I mean, yeah, that can't be pressed into a week or two.
No, it's going to be pressed to get it into three, to be honest with you, with as many players.
Be real tight.
More than 700. So you're going to have that 3 week. And then we decided last week that to be reasonable.
But then also in that timeline there, we're talking about, you know, free agent period. We're also talking about the undrafted rookie.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, all these guys, I mean, if there's anybody that I feel for, it's probably the undrafted rookies right now. Typically this time of year, I mean, they're getting looks in practice. They're getting reps in practice. And right now they have no clue.
No.
You know, the draft picks, you know, probably got some playbooks, some type of heads up on what they are going to be expected to know when they get to camp, and undrafted rookies. I mean, what do?
They're out in the cold.
Yeah.
They're out in the cold.
No time to show your skills set to a general manager and coaching staff.
So a three-week window is reasonable. And then because you're not going to have an on-the-field session, you're not going to have an off-season conditioning program, a three-week training camp would seem reasonable. At least that's what we discussed last week.
Yeah, that to me was the extreme shortest amount of time that you would have to have.
Again, you're cramming.
To me, I think you got to have more than that. I mean, there's got to be some concern with coaches and general managers that, you know, are the players or have the players gotten themselves in good enough shape that they can hit the field for a game within 3 weeks, you know, of starting, you know, camp.
So just being conservative and reasonable, that's a six-week window, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you back up from opening day, September the 11th, 6 weeks, that's August 1st. Well, if you want to get the Hall of Fame game in, that means you've got to go July 1st in order to get training camp open for the Rams and the Bears on July 23rd. So just to give you that timeline again, and that's a month away. That means you've got to have an agreement.
Yeah, and
I don't know.
I don't know if you had a chance to read Chris Collinsworth, who he's a good broadcaster. Sometimes he comes off a little bit snooty to me, but I think he's got some good insight. I don't know if you happened to see his quotes this week. He said that he actually took a non-paying job to coach up his son's high school football team as a wide receivers coach, and he had talked about this could last.
He thought November.
Yeah, November, and he once again reiterated that, saying that, hey, look, you know, I don't expect to see football until November, which, you know, high school games or seasons for the most part are just about wrapped up by November. he's never been the glass is half full kind of a guy.
Yeah.
And by sure. saying this again, he's clearly shown.
He could sit in that seat on a regular basis.
Yeah,
and fill it quite
that
well.
Was Vic's seat. He definitely is not a glass half full type of guy.
So what you're talking about, though, is about a 30-day window here that a court ruling is going to come down, hopefully come down. It doesn't have to come down in any set time period. Remember, they were talking about a ruling from the Eighth Circuit on the lockout that didn't come for weeks and weeks and weeks. They got the stay, and then they're supposed to get a ruling. Where there's no guarantee it's going to come in the month of June. But if it does, there's always the appeal process
right.
that, again, could push everything back. You know, the player's strategy has been to litigate.
Well, and here's the other thing that I wonder about.
I mean, they might keep going.
We're talking about timelines here for the Third Circuit Court of Appeals.
Eighth Circuit.
June 3rd. I'm stuck in my head.
Yeah, it's hard to get that.
But where does the timeline come in for the players possibly waiting on Judge Doty's decision about the broadcast television money? Do they continue to wait for a decision from Judge Doty on that? Because that could certainly bring them a little bit of leverage. There's a lot of timelines.
Yeah.
You know, and the most
but
important.
But not a lot of time.
No, but and that's the thing. You know, the most important timeline of all is the one in which we're talking about, which is the number of days you really need to kind of get this thing kicked off without having a delay.
Flip side, Loggy, is that there are 3 weeks they can play with. They can remove the bye weeks, which won't make anybody happy. They've got the week between the Super Bowl and the championship games, and then mm-hmm. they've got actually a week to push the Super Bowl back. So there's a 3 week flexibility timeline, but you have to wonder, you know, how much moving the Super Bowl is huge.
Yeah,
so that's a huge deal.
In a way, you know, we've talked about, you know, here on these airwaves about how the league, you know, we thought for a couple of years now has really eyeballed that President's Weekend as a date that they would like to eventually maybe settle in.
Yeah.
How close? What is the Super Bowl?
In an 18-game schedule, that's what, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so,
like.
I mean, could this end up being pushed back to maybe get to that weekend, which the league has kind of eyeballed for a number of years, to where you would have the Super Bowl on Sunday and then President's Day on Monday, which is a national holiday? You know, could they end up saying, hey, look, we're just going to push this thing back to where the Super Bowl falls on President's Day weekend? Could be.
Yeah, you could get back that far. So there are a couple of opportunities.
How far is that? It's generally
2 weeks after the Super Bowl.
So 2 weeks. So in reality, you could possibly gain, you talked about three, you could gain 5 weeks of extra time by pushing it back to that weekend. And then, you know, if that does happen, does the league ever leave? You know, may they stay on President's Weekend
whether they go to an 18-game schedule or not.
Yeah.
Well, you might sell more tickets in some places in the South if you start the season later.
You might.
Of course, you might sell fewer in some places in the North. But, hey, we'll lay it all out there. The Super Bowl is going to be in the cold weather in a couple of years. All right, time for a break. Jaguars this week, Thunders ahead here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. You know, we were just in the break, and I don't know why it hit me, but it just hit me. You know, normally we get into June, at least we know, Logs, we've got 6-8 weeks of slow time leading
up
to
OTAs, training camp. You know, something we regularly talk about.
All right, we're
watching OTAs.
Yeah, we are. Although I kind of got bored with the underwear practices the last couple of years. But you get what I'm saying. At least we knew it would come to an end at the end of July, and we would have training camp to look forward to. And so every show that we did over the summer, we could kind of focus. Let's talk about the receivers and what they did in OTAs today mm-hmm. and how they got to get better and
how they look.
Exactly. That
kind of
thing.
Who's looking like a Pro Bowler in the underwear league?
Exactly. We have none of that. I mean, right now, we don't know.
One thing we do know is that today was the first day of the 30 Days of Teal, which is for all Jaguar season ticket holders and an encouragement for people to get their tickets now. Today's drawing was for what, Joe?
Hey, you know, they got each day themed out. So Wednesdays are part of the action Wednesday.
Okay.
Okay, and the part of the action Wednesday is a pregame sideline passes for two today. So some lucky season ticket owner
nice.
Is going to get a phone call, and they'll be awarded pregame sideline passes for two. Thursdays are behind-the-scenes Thursdays. Friday is Big Cat Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday is Opportunity of a Lifetime Saturday. And I got to tell you, Opportunity of a Lifetime Saturday is where they put coming up to the booth to meet you guys.
That's a good thing.
So somebody's
that
somebody's
is an opportunity of a lifetime.
We better,
and that is June 18th.
We better have that catered that day.
That's the 18th. Yeah, we should.
You know what we'll do that day, Joe? We'll go in, you know, because we're up there, mid-level, west side of the stadium. We'll sneak over to the GM Gene suite.
And oh, he's got stuff.
Steal all of his catered foods
those little meatballs. Yeah. You know?
Well, that is the opportunity of a lifetime for someone to join us in stealing other people's food live in the press box.
Sunday is gift-giving Sunday.
Don't look for that,
Gene. Monday is gift card Monday, and then it's upgrade Tuesday. They'll upgrade you. But for the rest of the week, do we have a second?
Yeah, go for it. You've got all the time you want, Joe. Just tell Jeff and I when you want us back.
Just kidding. Tomorrow, if you're the lucky winner, you get a Jaguars locker room tour for 10.
Nice.
Okay? So if you got 9 friends, look at you. Friday would be a round of golf with a Jaguars coach. Round of golf with a coach.
Nice.
How cool is that? The first
drinks included with that?
Probably. The first opportunity of a lifetime Saturday, I think, is really cool. You get to play Madden 12 on the Everbank scoreboard.
That would be fun.
There. That's pretty hip.
Although I'd rather do Dangerous Game or something like that on that, but it's just
I don't know Dangerous Game.
It's a hunting game.
Okay,
but there's some great things. It's all laid out. Just go to Jaguars.com and you can find.
And the key thing is you have to have season tickets.
Yes,
and of course you get your Teal Deals booklet of coupons up to $3,000. We talked about that last week. So get your season tickets, folks.
Of course, the final prize on the 30th of June, 2 tickets to the Super Bowl in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Hey, off the field, just for a sec. Mm-hmm. You see that Shaquille O'Neal retired today?
I did. 19 years of the big man's
makes you feel
prowess.
A little old, but he's nice. 39.
Been a heck of a football player.
Oh, what position would he play?
A football player, he was a left tackle all day. Good feet. Couldn't
long
shoot
arms.
A free throw. Save his life, but you don't have to shoot free throws in football.
I saw him play one of the first games of his career at LSU as a rookie with Chris Jackson and the other big guy, I forget his name, Stanley something or other. And I never forget, he was 18 or 19 years old, and I thought, holy cow.
He's huge.
They don't make guys like this.
Big man.
They just don't. Here he is now retiring at 39.
Big man.
Life moves on.
Yeah. Little news item today. Head coach Jack Del Rio, they put a release out today about the Professional Football Coaches Association. I guess it's the NFLCA. Which is their group that they did not know about the what was it? Well, something was filed.
They filed an amicus brief, friend of the court brief, in support of the players.
Well, I don't want to say that it wasn't. Well,
they
yes,
took a
the,
side.
The NFLCA did, and two coaching staffs, one of them being the Redskins,
right.
And then the New Orleans Saints came out and said we knew nothing about this, and. The Redskins staff went a little further and said, we knew nothing about this, and we are in the owner's court here. Jack Del Rio pretty much said that he didn't know about any of this stuff and didn't go as far as what Mike Shanahan's group did in Washington,
saying,
hey, we're in full support with ownership. He just said, hey, look, we knew nothing about this. We didn't know that it was going to be filed. We weren't consulted, et cetera, and that we're looking forward to coaching up our players. You know, so he didn't pick a side, which, you know, I respect that.
Do you think that the coaches are caught in the middle on this deal? Because they are employed by the teams, but they have contracts too. I mean, they're not long-term employees. We know the life of an assistant coach. They come and go every 3 to 5 years, generally speaking. You think they're caught in the middle here?
Because
they're free agents in a way, too.
Well, I who's really caught in the middle to me?
Us, because we don't have anything to talk
about
tonight.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the people to me that are caught in the middle are the organizations that have started to let staff go, which to me I find kind of crazy because there really hasn't been a significant loss of revenue. We're talking about the TV money. And for teams to have, you know, had unpaid furloughs or whatever they call it, and then also staff reductions or firings, et cetera, to me, those are the people that are really caught in the middle. You know, for coaches, for the most part, with the exception of the Raiders, you know, they're still coaching, they're still getting paid. But a guy who happens to work wherever in an organization.
Joe.
Yeah. that you know.
This just happened 4 years ago. The Jaguars worked a little bit ahead.
Yeah, they say that, hey, you know, we don't need your services right now because we've got a lockout going on. To me, that's the unfortunate side of the lockout.
Yeah, and just, you know, just to follow up on the Joe thing here, Joe, you worked here full-time.
Well, you guys, too.
Yeah, but let's focus on you. You worked here full-time.
Okay. Yes, I did.
And when this, here's what I tell people when they ask about the lockout. The owners knew in 06 when they signed that they were going to exercise the option in 08 and lock out in 11. They've known. So there have been teams over the last 4 and 5 years that have strategically made decisions about the organization that they have.
Indianapolis Colts did the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah, Jaguars
John Osher, you know, was a full-time in-house employee.
You bet he was.
And I guess some would call it, you know, they trimmed the fat, but I don't consider that trim the fat. It's, you know, they were preparing. Some of them were preparing for this moment.
Exactly. Teams have been doing that over the last couple of years to be ready because they knew that that was going to be it. And I guess the final thought in this, and then we'll talk football. I want to see him get a deal this time where one side doesn't leave the table feeling like we're going to exercise an option out of this deal. Last time, obviously, they did.
Yes.
And the owners are part to blame that time because they couldn't work together on revenue sharing.
You knew it right away when Mr. Wilson, the owner of the Buffalo Bills, says, I don't know what I just signed. And some people criticized him at that point. The old man, he doesn't have a clue.
He knew.
He put it right on the money.
He knew. And Wayne told them all as well. He told them all as well. He voted in solidarity with the other owners. Mike Brown and Ralph Wilson were against it. But he told them then what was going to happen now. So he saw it. So as they go forward, get a deal that both sides can look each other in the eye and say, we're partners in this. This will work.
Yep.
Will there be disagreements? Yeah. But we've known since 06 when they signed it that we were going to hit this point. And so now get a deal done, however long it takes, that both sides can live with in the long-term future.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, by having a lockout, I think that it has spoken volumes that the owners are serious.
You bet they are.
Has there ever been a lockout in league history?
Not in the NFL.
Nah.
No.
And I mean, just that sheer act of a lockout, to me,
you've seen it
has spoken volumes.
You've seen it in hockey, mm-hmm. and you're going to probably see it in all likelihood in the NBA.
And when it happened in hockey, the owners were committed.
Yes.
And so history has to show that, hey, look, you know, this side is serious about this.
Well, and you know that the folks that helped the NHL put that lockout together and orchestrate it from a legal standpoint are working with the NFL.
With the NFL.
Too.
Hockey also took a hit because of it.
They took a huge hit. They took an absolutely huge hit.
Which I don't think – will there be a hit? Yes. But the NFL would not sustain the kind of losses that hockey has.
The NFL is so widely popular no, anybody would take a hit, but I think that when it comes back, I think most people are going to be, man, it's about time we get our football back.
Part of our culture, for
yeah.
sure. Yeah, people get over it. They might be mad for a while, but they'll come back. And I think fantasy football drives that as well.
Well,
because the amount of people that partake in that is.
You know, it's kind of fun. We talk about, you know, everybody's really starting to get antsy about this thing. You know, and I'm getting a lot of questions from people out and about. You know, what's the deal? You know, are they going to get this solved? Are we going to have football? You know, my answer is I don't know, but I mean I'm just like most people in that I'm already jonesing for football. Yeah. I mean, this is the time of year, you know, where you're starting to, you know, like we said, watch the OTAs and see a team starting to shape up and see players and not seeing it. And yesterday, I flat on my back, my back was bothering me a little bit, and so I was giving a little bit of a rest, and you know, middle of the day, there's nothing on TV, and you know, did all my emails, phone business, things like that, and so I turned on the NFL Network. And, man, I mean, I'm watching the lost reels footage on the NFL Network. And, man, you want to talk about good programming.
Yeah.
I mean, I love watching some of that stuff. And Dandy Don Meredith, and, you know, they're showing him filming commercials from way back in the early days with a sweater commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's just comical. And then they were talking about Steve Sabol earlier today about, you know, the first days of miking players, you know, and listening to the game, and the defensive tackle for the Green Bay Packers that played on all those great Packer teams, Willie Brown. They actually had a camera with him his last game ever as a Packer. I mean, that's just good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm in the same boat as everybody else. I'm just like, hey.
Don't want to miss it.
You know, I got to have my football, and I love my football.
Stay tuned, folks. It's a busy week for the NFL in terms of football. with the court hearing on Friday. All right, busy time for us at the bottom of the hour. News is next from the news team at WOKV. Depend on it. Well, right along here, 6:38 and counting towards 7 o'clock in the end of this program. You can join us, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. What else is in your mailbag there? What else do you want to tackle tonight?
The other thing that I wonder is that, you know, with all this stuff that's going on with Jim Tressel and the Ohio State program and their quarterback there at Ohio State.
Terrell Pryor.
And, you know, there's talk that could some of these players – declare themselves eligible for the NFL supplemental draft. And that certainly opens up a whole different can of questions, and that can there be a supplemental draft?
I don't know. I haven't heard whether that's on the calendar or not.
It's been kind of talked about and debated with different people. And you got to remember one thing about the supplemental draft is that if those picks are used, you lose a future matching round in the upcoming draft.
And of course, there are no upcoming drafts scheduled.
That's the big question. So if you can't have a supplemental draft, or if you can, what's the answer to that question? And second of all, if there is no supplemental draft, do those players that declare themselves eligible, can they be free agents?
That's a very
in this
complex
rookie
question,
pool
yeah.
class? I mean, to me, that's... there's a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered there. And if there is a supplemental draft, when would they hold it?
Well, normally it happens in July, but yeah, we just don't know at this point. And there's some good players at Ohio State, some really good players.
Yeah, so, that to me is another question that's got to be answered here coming up. And not so much, you know, because it was very clear that the league could hold a draft in 2011 when the bargaining agreement expired. It clearly stated that upon its expiration, there can be a college eligibility draft following. Well, you know, like I said, you have the next draft, the supplemental draft, but that's based on having a future draft.
Right.
And there is no CBA that says there's going to be a 2012 draft.
Well, you have to know that they've considered all these possibilities. I mean, these are bright men on both sides.
Oh,
from
sure.
a legal standpoint, I would think it might even be a bargaining chip. It might be something to be used at the negotiating table because you've got these young men that are going to want to come out if they're not going to be able to play.
Right.
And the supplemental draft is obviously one that is going to tie into the regular draft. And we kind of have this sense that the regular draft is going to come under fire in the antitrust lawsuits.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, there was talk that you know, there could, you know, they were talking about, you know, if there's no CBA going forward, you know, there could be, you know, suits filed challenging the future draft. You know, could there be a lawsuit filed with a supplemental draft that was trying to be held this year? You know, there's so many questions that, you know, you don't know the answer to, and that this and the answer to all of this
right
is bargaining. You know, is getting the two sides, the two parties back to the bargaining table and talking about things and finding a way to reach middle ground. I mean, that to me is the answer to all of these questions.
Do you think if the players are dealt a blow by the Eighth Circuit, whenever it comes out, you know, Monday, 3 weeks from now, July 5th, whatever it might be, do you think that they will recognize that and come back to the table?
Well,
do you think either side will?
I think either side is waiting for this decision from the Eighth to find out where the leverage lies. You know, and then after that point, okay, here – this side's got leverage because the Eighth Circuit said this. Now it's time to get back to bargaining because we have the leverage or they have the leverage. So I think that after this decision is made, then we will see it back to the table. But how long does it take when it gets to that point? You know, how long does the court take? And then how long does it take to have a negotiation that both sides can walk away saying, I can live with that?
Well, they couldn't do it in all those intense negotiations at the end of February.
Well,
during the extension,
I really
March.
Don't know how. And in my heart, I believe that those negotiations that happened already have not been in earnest from either side, because I think either side wanted to have the other side feel the pinch in one way. The owners wanted to get that pinch felt from the other side with a lockout. The players wanted to get that pinch felt from the owners via.
You know, loss of
disbanding the union and filing lawsuits. You know, so each side, I mean, if each side had a game plan in effect, then how can you say that both sides really negotiated in earnest?
That's well said. You're right. They couldn't have.
No.
So it's going to take a ruling. It's going to take a couple more weeks to know how this plays out in terms of their game plan. Where the leverage really lies.
Well, and we said way back when all of this was going on in March, when's the timeline? And we were kind of hoping that, you know, the timeline would be that date that they kept pushing back. But was it really?
No,
I mean,
not.
Really
now
not.
That you, now that you say that, no, it doesn't make any sense
no.
that it would be.
Well, it wasn't a real timeline. The real timeline, really, is September 11th. You know, is getting close to that date to get the season off on schedule and to get a full season play. That's when the real timeline starts.
So we're still waiting to find out who will feel the fire first.
Yeah.
Right? Because the owners have assumed that the players would, because clearly the players don't have the resources individually like the owners do.
That's when you could have the parties get back and really get down to it. But now, after that decision, then you could have some movement. But because that date or that decision is approaching a similar date that gives a true timeline, which is what we've talked about, you know, needing 6 weeks to prep for a season. That's the other timeline.
Well, true or false, Logs, that once they start negotiating in earnest, whatever point that is, once they begin, they can get it done fast. Because really, there are negotiating points all along the road. It's the money. It's that $1 billion off the top. It's the way they divide the $1 billion that solves it all. And if they can get that done in a day or two, everything else will just fall into place.
Sure it would. Sure it would. Because, I mean, that's the biggest. That's the biggest nut to crack.
The 18-game schedule, we've already seen it removed from the table.
Well, and they're still talking about it. And I saw that Commissioner Goodell once again kind of reiterated that, hey, the fans want 18 games. And I'm going to reiterate what I said to that when he first said it. It's not that the fans want 18 games. It's that the fans
want fewer preseason
are less concerned about having 4 preseason games. There's a difference. You know, fans would rather have 18 games and 2 preseason games than they would 16 regular season games and 14 preseason games. But that's a far cry from saying fans want 18 games and fans then fans want 16. Fans are okay with 16 games
right.
if there's 2 preseason games.
But when I read those comments, I saw that as test balloon, leverage point. We're not going away from this, but we'll give it up at the table if we have to.
Another you know, chip tossed back in, I guess.
Exactly. All right.
You know, but hey, for next week's show, just a thought and see if you would like to go there.
All right.
As part of that, you know, NFL Network, I guess you could say, when a TV station like you know Discovery Channel has a marathon deadliest catch day.
Love
you know,
they show the shows
back to back to back to back. Well, today, you know, during my little marathon session with the NFL Network, they had a great half an hour piece or hour piece, I can't remember what it was. It was the 10 worst free agent signings in NFL history.
So what do you want to do, the 10 worst in Jaguars history?
I think, we, you know, because we're dealing with a limited timeline, I think we could do five worst and 5 best.
Okay.
Next week. Because when I saw that, I said, you know, boy, I'm trying to think about the Jaguars. And, you know, you think about Bryce Pop, you know, Carnell Lake.
We'll give them all away.
You know, just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'm thinking of another one in particular from 2003. But we'll leave that one alone for the moment.
Yeah, next week.
All right. We are due for a break. We will take it now and come back with the final segment. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville, and only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. When you're talking about Andre Rison, you know it's boring.
The 10 worst free agent signings in NFL history, he actually popped up twice.
Which ones?
Cleveland, going to Cleveland.
That was 95.
Yeah, and then also going to the Raiders.
In 2000.
Because it was all kind of part of the – remember the safety that played for the Cowboys that had the interceptions in the Super
Larry
Bowl
Brown.
Against the Steelers,
yep,
Larry Brown, and he was on that list. David Boston leaving the Cardinals, going to San Diego was one. Alvin Harper leaving the Cowboys.
Going to the Bucks.
To go to the Bucks. Neil O'Donnell leaving Pittsburgh, going to the Jets was one.
You said Larry Brown was on the list?
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry Brown was a safety for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Super Bowl 30, yeah. He went to the Raiders. Signed a huge deal.
Who else they had on the list?
Carnell Lake didn't make it here. I guess he took $18 million out of the deal.
No,
so.
They had, they'd mentioned a lot of guys, you know, Adam Archuleta going to the Redskins, yeah. Chuck Smith going, leaving the Falcons, going to the Carolina Panthers as one. Amon Green leaving Green Bay to go to Houston Texans was one of them. But, I mean, they mentioned a lot of them. Albert Haynesworth to the Redskins for $100 million.
Yeah, worst ever.
Was the number one.
Is he still there?
He's still signed.
Okay.
I mean, they have not cut him. They have not traded him or anything else. But it was kind of – when they got to that number one, I mean, poor Redskins, I mean, they just beat him up.
Yeah.
I mean, because they have a whole list of free agent signings that didn't work out. They talked about Deion Sanders, Bruce Smith, you know.
And it's all in the Daniel Snyder era.
Yeah, and the guy who was his general manager, Vinny Serrato.
Right. Man, give me a checkbook and watch me mess it up.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to see that. And when I saw that, I was like, you know, I said, we could probably do that with, you know, Jaguars history. So we'll do that coming up. And then I have promised that I will, a couple shows ago, that I will watch some of the game film on the rookies. And I will do that. And I will talk about the what I call the profile reel that General Manager Gene Smith has put together on all these players. And it's good and it's bad. So I will do that.
You've
and
seen
I
it
will,
already?
No.
Okay.
Me and Mike Perkins need to get on the same page, and when we do, I will tell people what I think. So I'm looking forward to watching that because, you know, a lot of these guys that the Jaguars drafted, you know, kind of under the radar, you know, and so they're
except
not
– the quarterback.
You know, and the quarterback obviously is, you know, number one in very large, bold, and capital letters, you know. So I'm going to look at all of it.
By the way, the quarterback –
we'll talk about it.
Is, I don't know where he is, but he is working in his home state to help the folks in Joplin with some tornado relief
United
working
Way.
With the United
yeah.
Way.
Yeah, good for him. And I'm not exactly sure, and you know probably where Joplin is.
Joplin
exactly.
is right where Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Missouri meet. It is at the very western edge of the Ozarks.
Okay. And Blaine Gabbert is from
St. Louis.
Suburbs of St. Louis.
Yeah, it's a long way away. But
long
there are a lot
way
of Tigers
away, but,
fans.
I mean, hey, home state guy, man.
Yep.
Missouri product.
You got it.
Good for him.
A lot of Tigers fans down there, and so he's got a huge following.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that, you know, you got a rookie quarterback, and then other teams such as the Cincinnati Bengals have a rookie quarterback in the fold.
Yeah.
And they're all this stuff that you're hearing about, all these player organized workouts, I call them the POW. You know, and Jaguars, you know, David's got group of receivers, I guess, that here in town somewhere they're getting together, throwing the ball, and Scobie and Podlish and Jeremy Kane are getting together, working on their snaps and kicking, punting, whatever you want to call it. And around the league, it's almost like who's doing what and who's not doing what? Who's there, who's not there?
You know, well, there's nothing else to report on.
I mean, that's what the news has become. You know, Michael Crabtree hasn't gone to a workout in San Francisco yet. The quarterback that Cincinnati has drafted is going to be staying with Whitworth, the tackle that got in a fight with John Henderson that day.
Okay.
When John Henderson tried to gouge his eyeballs out.
Yeah, 2008.
You know, and Tom Brady has taken a break from Hollywood and has come back to Boston coincide with –
glad to have you back, Tom.
He's got a an Audi event, which Audi is a huge sponsor with Tom Brady, and then also Best Buddies, a charity that does great things in the Boston area
does.
That I know very well. He has an event with Best Buddies, two of them, I believe, and he is organizing workouts in the Boston area. So, I mean, that's the, kind of the stuff you're getting now.
What if you were playing, would you be taking part actively in the player-organized workouts?
I think the one thing that I would want to do, certainly, is to have positional workouts. The quarterback and receivers, to me, I say that that's a positional workout. Cornerbacks can do drills against themselves where one guy is acting as a wide receiver. Very difficult to do kind of a team-oriented player-only workout, in my mind. Offensive and defensive linemen, I think it's a great thing if they can get together and work on their positional drills that they normally work out because, you know, I kind of come from both backgrounds, you know, the pre-OTA era. You know, I was in that pre-OTA era, and then when I came here in 95, which was shortly after Jimmy Johnson really started the OTA era, so I got to taste both and what it was like to do both. And there's no question that as a player, you always get better workouts when you have OTAs, because if you're lifting with players, you're competitive people, you compete with the players in the weight room, on the practice fields and such. So you get better naturally right. that way. Do you have to have it? No. I mean, the NFL went for many years without having any OTA. So, you know, like I said before, 3-day minicamp, say goodbye. You know, and the 3-day minicamp was a big happy hour, you know, because you go and practice twice a day, and as soon as meetings let out, you're catching up with the boys on the team, having beers at the bar.
Right.
You know, and then went to bed, and after 3 days, you felt like you'd been through a war because you had 2 days, then you had really
two
3 days.
At night, yeah.
Yeah, 3 days, really. So I kind of got a flavor of both, and clearly the OTAs, you get better in that type of design.
So from an overall, and I think I mentioned last week that I asked this question of Tom Coughlin when he was in town for his J Fund a little more than a week
ago. He's pulling his hair out, I'm sure.
Yeah, in fact, his comment when he opened because there were some Giants players there. Was I want to thank you guys for showing up so I can talk to my players. Of course, yeah. They made a big point of not saying anything more than hi, how are you?
That's right.
But the reality of it is that I asked him, where's the line where the quality of football starts to suffer because of missing the
offseason? Well, his answer would probably be a lot different than others.
Well, his answer was that they haven't reached it yet, which was surprising to me. Where is that line to you?
To me, it's fast approaching. I think if you don't get something done by the end of June, then I think you'll
see it on the field.
For a trained eye, you would be able to see that it's not quite as good. But I think for the casual fan, I don't think you'd be able to notice the difference that much.
We'll leave it on that thought. And next week,
top five best free agent signings in Jaguars history, and then the worst five.
Okay.
Free agent signings in Jaguars history. I think that'd be fun.
It will be. We'll look forward to it. We've got to have something to talk about right now. Maybe there'll be something from the Eighth Circuit. Maybe.
We'll see.
All right. Have a great night, everybody.